their archive. So anyhow, you had quite a lot to do. I mean, this is a kind of really understatement with the fluxes and all these movements. And I imagine that you, in a way, that there have been a time when you, for yourself or for your group of artists, when you rediscovered Dada. Is this true first? Was there a kind of discovering Dada for you, and was it important if?
Well, I think my first real contact with Dada came while I was living in Europe, not in the United States, but
right.
Then that goes back rather far, because I first came to Paris in 1949 and stayed in Europe at that time for 17 years. And you can remember the great Dada shows that started up just about this time, and the first of the great Schwitters shows. Well, this was quite an eye-opener, and I started looking at the stuff for the first time. I had rather formal classical education, and I was not prepared for these things. I mean, I was not a Dadaist before I came to Europe. It might have been strange, but not that. And it's very interesting that when I met Tristan Tzara in 1949, I knew the name, and I knew that he had something to do with Dada, but he really didn't interest me in the least somehow, because I was much more interested in Osip Zadkin, who was on the other side of the room. And of course, Tzara and Osip Zadkin did not love one another politically. In fact, they'd had just a terrible political argument. But I actually sympathized with Zadkin and was admiring him and not Tristan Tzara.
How did you happen to meet?
Well, I was at a party. I was very, very close with a woman named Sharon Siama, whose father was Lawrence Vale, who had been married to Peggy Guggenheim. And Peggy was in town, and Lawrence threw a gala party for his friends and Peggy's friends, etc. And we were always in this salon, and that's how I met Tzara. And Zadkin. When I changed my mind, I suppose it was several years later when these exhibitions started going around, and one saw the Schwitters' work for the first time, and the great Dada show, I can remember, I saw it first in Frankfurt am Main, you know the one I mean, just...
Yeah.
And then I started buying these things, and buying the new books available about this period, and of course then one started finding out more about this wonderful Duchamp person and so on. So it wasn't too many years later it was not too many years later indeed. I think it was, when was Material published? This is Daniel's Raya Material, you remember. And my first book, Concretionen, was done in 57 or 58 or something. And by that time, I was so much at home and then the whole world of Dada, that I was not afraid at all to contact Hans Arp the next time I was in Paris and asked him how he liked the book. And he said he liked it very much indeed. And he was concerned about getting rid of a book like that. And I said, well, of course, you really can't get rid of a book. We send them to people and they send it back to us and say, don't send us this crap. And he said, I know very well about that. He said, because you know that for years I had to publish my own work, because they said, you know, don't do that stuff. They're interested in the sculpture and the stuff on the wall. So, and, well, that was Art. And then through Daniel, I met Man Ray. And that was a very lovely experience, meeting a person who had played such an interesting role in Dada and then surrealism, who turned out to be a very lovable American, just as plain as an old shoe outwardly, but his head was full of things that were far more exotic than old shoes. And then I've written about how Max Ernst drove far out of his way once upon a time to visit me in Darmstadt. And that sounds quite wonderful, but why he came was that his then secretary, my friend Rusty Strombeck, said, if you want cheap American whiskey, go buy Emmett. He can get it for you at his PX prices. I was then working for the Stars and Stripes, you know.
So it wasn't because of the art you did.
We talked about that when I met him later in Paris, you know, we were joking about that somehow. so that, you know, one met these people not because you went to the shrine to worship, but there they were in real life, the power. You met them on the most extraordinary occasions. That's not going to happen anymore. I don't think there's one alive now, is there?
No.
Husenbeck, well, I got to know Husenbeck quite well in New York toward the end, when he was a rather lonely man. His friends would drop off one by one. We had a very nice relationship. And then
he changed quite a lot, huh? Because he rejected all his bad things.
It was quite sad when he would do a reading, say, in Central Park of the Fantastische Debate. And his voice was gone, and sounded like an old man mumbling. It was just so saddening to hear this, you know. And what I can't just say with Duchamp, because I met Duchamp I was working on a cover for the American edition of my book, Sweethearts. And I was in Nantes with Daniel Sperry, and I said, I just can't do it. There's only one cover. I was saying it in a joking vein. There's only one thing I can think on that cover, and that would be Duchamp's Cœur Romand. And I said, yeah. He said, why don't you ask him? And I said, yeah, why don't I fly to the moon or something like that? He said, well, I know him. Shall I write him for you? And so Daniel wrote him, and Duchamp said, I would be absolutely delighted. I know the book, because I forget whether it was Richard Hamilton or Jasper Johns who had given him the Hans-Jürgen Meyer edition of the book, and he liked it very much. And he said, as soon as he comes back to New York, come and see me, we'll do something about it, or tell his publisher to contact me and we'll see about it. So that's why Cœur Volant flies on my Sweethearts. And very Duchampian situation too, because Richard Hamilton did the dust jacket blurb to that. And Duchamp had this lovely notion that since the book starts from the back, you know, it goes back to front instead of front to back, that there's a cover, let me show it to you, I think you've probably seen it. So that if you hold the book the way you do a traditional book, this would be the front cover, except the front cover is at the back. But if you look at the back cover, which is the front cover really, it says front cover illustration, curve or not, so then you have to turn to the back, and that's the front. You know, it's very confusing.
And so there haven't been any, you know, contradictions or problems with these old people, because I know there have been some other of the old Dadaists who hated these younger guys, because they accused them of just simply imitating in a bad thing.
Certainly not with Duchamp. In fact, Duchamp encouraged such people, and his friends to the end were much younger people, you know, Armand and Jasper Johns and Richard Hamilton, who was surrounded by younger people that way. Well, it was in a strange situation being in New York most of the time, too. But then he and Max Ernst were the very closest of friends all the time. Was it in Ernst's place that he died, or was Ernst with him? I forget, but they were very, very close. And Husenbeck, well, now there is something. I really got into terrible arguments with him. And I asked him why he'd been so mean to Kurt Schwitters and had tried to just eradicate him and wipe it out, you know. And he just said that he actually thought that the guy was a little bit too bourgeois for Berliner, like Husenbeck. But he also said that it was much better for Kurzschwitters to persevere with Merz and make that one of the great entities in the 20th century art picture. That didn't answer my question. But then, on the other hand, Husebeck was very close with art and saddened very much from that, and he was so lonesome then.
But so you discovered, you got to know even the people from Dada long before you found the Fluxus in 62.
Yes, I was doing all sorts of things long before that. In fact, in my performance book, I think I will start with a beautiful picture that I found in a book about the Darmstadt Keller, a performance of mine from 1959 and 1960, in which I'm doing my opera, which is just being published now with that picture by Hundertmark.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell the story of, of that. And you must remember that the people that I grew up with in Europe up to 1949 were rather remarkable people. I'm speaking of Daniel Spurry and Tangerley and Eve Klein and such people. They naturally were doing wonderful things that I hadn't allowed for, not as a traditional poet. And so this being with people like that utterly changed my way of looking at poetry and art. And I found it was the art for my time somehow, for me, and made me very happy. And of course, these people were terribly interested too, because Tangley was always talking about the marvelous Duchampian things, and he had met Husenbeck, and when he came back from his first trip to America, telling all these wonderful things. So one suddenly, this stuff was thrust upon one through oneself through these friendships that other people had with real, active, living Dadaists, too.
But there must...
But no one ever thought... I'd like to say this, too, because so many people are always thinking of anyone who did anything new after the end of World War II as some kind of neo-Dadaist. That was never part of... It broke my heart when George McCunis call something neo-Dada in music, you know, and I was rather shocked, and I said to a lot of people, well, I'm part of this Fluxus thing, but I don't agree with that. I really don't think what I'm doing is neo-Dada. I have a feeling that it's what I'm doing now, and we're not charged with the same political, economic, social issues as the Dadas. It would be most unfair to claim that relationship.
No, it's true, I agree with it. So the term neo-Dada is something
really stupid.
And only stupid people usually use this today, or think themselves as neo-Dada.
Well, something even more laughable, you know, Fluxus is really quite young, quite too young to be so much part of the museum world these days. But already, some collectors speak of second-generation Fluxus, and Annie has been said that you are a second or third generation Fluxus. And Annie protests at such designations.
Right.
She is Anne Noel, really. And the work I do now in poetry, etc., I mean, some clerks will actually say, is this Dadaist? And I would say, so far as I know, no one was interested in doing what I'm doing then. I mean, this is my thing, that's what I've been doing for a long time, and I don't call it Dada.
No.
They might enjoy it
the
same way that I enjoy their work, but it wouldn't come out of the same thing.
But nevertheless, I mean, by knowing all these people and by knowing these people who were connected with Dada in the 20s, do you feel that there has been some influence on your work? I mean, not in the stupid sense that you made a kind of Dada, of course, not this way, but how did it happen to influence you?
Of course, you can't walk down the street without seeing the influence of Dada all about you, in every shop window, in every ad that you pick up in a newspaper or magazine, the mentality of people who go to museums, the artists who are of my generation. It's a spirit that certainly has something to do with the world that the Dadas opened up. And Dada is not as old as it seems sometimes, too, because of the historical problems of of the world, the time of World War II, through National Socialism, etc., these degenerate masters were all kicked out and were largely unknown to most of the people, except some of the older artists in Berlin, let's say, or Frankfurt, or Darmstadt, with Ed Schmidt and people like that.
And most
they
of them
knew
had
that
to
they
exile.
Could communicate these things. And in the United States, it was the same thing, that it lay buried. And then American artists started having contacts with people who had been at the Bauhaus and other things. And then the whole surrealist movement descended on New York. All at the same time, there was Max Ernst was there, Norbert Lebel was there, and Duchamp was there. And so then these contacts started there too.
But still,
so it's new, it's fresh in this sense.
It's true.
To the later generation of artists.
But still, so in a way, your reception of the recent history during this time then was, let's say, closer to Dada and maybe a little bit surrealism, though I think it was closer to Dada. And there have been, of course, after 45, you know, you had Informel, and there were a lot of other movements too, but still, I think you have been closer to special movements. And what would you say?
Well, the things I mean, sometimes people say, who are your favorite poets? And I often say, well, the people I would take to bed with me to read at night, if I had my library at Harvard here, would probably be Hans Arp. And such people as Schwitters. And I've translated a great deal of Schwitters. And I have taught at Harvard and at the California Institute of the Arts a course in which I tried to introduce these things, the non-technical writings of artists, such as Schwitters. In art, and so on, you know, like, and these were unknown things to these students, and they were quite excited by them too. And I felt that I just had to share what I knew about these people with these people in America who knew it probably only through the Motherwell or something else, but there was such a wonderful body of Schwitters to perform and do there. And at Harvard, it was the same thing. I can remember someone who had some connection with the Bauhaus coming in. The Carpenter Center of the Visual Arts at Harvard is a Corbusier building. And it's not very good for soundproofing because of some of Corbusier's quirks. But we were doing a big Schwitters day in our class. And there was knocking on the door. What was all the racket? What were we doing? And so I explained to this person with the Bauhaus connection exactly what we're doing. He said, oh my God, that's wonderful. Perhaps my students could listen to that. I said, yeah. But you're busy just now. It's wonderful.
So there really was, I mean, the people like to have a reception of all these things.
Oh, wow.
And also
the discovery of art
reactions.
Was very important for these students. And even some art historians borrowed my tapes of my translations of Kandinsky's poetry from the book Klinger. You know, that's 1912, something like that. And she said she was going to present this material to a meeting of the Kandinsky Society or something like that in Texas somewhere. She said, you realize we art historians are so busy talking about the pictures and erecting the laws about which are the real Kandinsky that we have no time to remember that he was a poet. And so she borrowed the tapes and took them to Texas. And she said many of these people who were, you know, the Kandinsky scholars were overwhelmed by the fact that, my God, this is good stuff.
Did you
And I tried to make the point too, with all of these people, Kandinsky says very clearly that the same thing goes into his poems that go into the pictures. And art has said that if he had to do all over again, would I be a sculptor or a poet? He said, I think I would choose poetry. This kind of thing. These people were not Sunday poets. I mean, they had a very strong, profound commitment to poetry. That was certainly true with Schwitters. I mean, this is not, you know, Sunday poetry. This is really the best the man can do comes out sometimes in words. And people are just too busy, of course, to allow in this great age of intermedia that someone so old as Fitt has had this multiple commitment too.
For you, and some movements, have there been special things which were more important or more innovative to your work than others? Let's say, have there been special parts of Dada which you really like more or thought you could handle better in working with it for your own artwork?
No, after I got to know Dada, nothing in Dada really bothered me at all, and I felt quite at home with it as a spectator, not quite as a participant, but my work really doesn't derive from that, but I feel completely at home in it.
Mm.
But it gives me courage when I see what has been done by great artists. It has given me the courage to do the things that I feel I should do, although I know that some people will say, my God, what is that? You know, but I accept that as part of my art heritage. And, and they showed me some of the possibilities, and why not carry it in your own direction?
And so this is true.
And I also like to say, I know it's very, very démodé to say anything about Picasso with enthusiasm these days, but Picasso has given me so much courage to do things in the visual way too. Not that I'm at all interested in the same art games that Picasso was, but he gives me courage just looking at his work. I approach it with such wonder and awe. And I was speaking with Alan Capra about this thing. He said, I know, isn't it true? And we were referring to Venice Pisa's last piece at the museum there, which was a wonderful assemblage, I think, of Picasso's that I knew only in reproduction.
Have you ever recited some Dada artists, let's say in poetry? Did you do that?
Yes, I did that not only as part of class, but in many, many times. I would stage evenings doing things that had been done at the Cabaret Voltaire.
Mm-hmm.
And then many times, I would say at least a dozen times in the United States, I did Kurt Schwitter's evenings. I never did the Urthamata because I didn't feel that I was capable of doing it. But so many other things I read and got students to perform, and we really presented them as evenings, and people were quite astonished by it. I'm speaking about an evening that would go on for 2 or 3 hours, you know, not just brief snatches of it. Hmm. And I spent over a period of 2 years in California, I did perhaps the important part of art's poetry. I translated into English. And then I think all but one poem from Klinger of Kandinsky, and I thought it was so important I'm trying to say things in a very practical way. I don't want to get into the metaphysics of art, but you know how it is sometimes when you're working, when you're doing your own poetry, you feel some communion with these, let's say, the spirits who are guiding your hand, like when I did my book Faust, and I have no idea how I was capable of doing a book in German, but there it came. And the new book, the Altmodischegedichte, I really think that there's an outside intervention somehow. I'm surprised that I have been capable of doing such a book in the German language as the Altmodischegedichte, and it thrills me very much. What got me to that was the way I started feeling some sense of identity with Schwitters and Arp while I was doing these translations, and with Kandinsky too, that I could be doing it from morning to night, and there was an extra thing in the brain just going round and round and round that was very Arp-like, or very Schwitters-like, or very Kandinsky-like. Yeah. But I had gotten into it so deeply that I just couldn't get out. So it should be clear that I don't tamper, say, with the poetry of these people. from an art historical interest at all, but of a creative interest in it and recreating these things. Oh, but there's something very funny that, you know, Rainer Pretzel does not do reprints. Yet at the same time, his uncle, Marc Ernst, told him that he could do the Sept Microbes. And Marx wrote that in French, of course, there's no German translation. So Rainer has asked me to translate Ernst's French into German. And Rainer says, this way, it won't be a reprint or a translation, but it'll certainly be a new poem by a poet, you know. And he says, this way I could see fit to do it. And I tell other people about that, and they say, oh, but I really don't think your German is up to it. You know, so you missed the joke, yeah. Man, you know, like, exactly. Like, this is a German artist poet writing in French, and I'm an American poet, and I'm going to turn this stuff into German. And
I mean, that's a lot.
It's going to take a long time to do, but it's entirely a creative experience. I'm not at all concerned. I mean, Rainer says that, his uncle Marx and I play some of the same word games, so why shouldn't I, you know, just try? So I'm trying it.
Emmett, I would like, if you don't mind, I would like to have you read or perform one of your pieces. Maybe one of the pieces you find, it is, it's not too far away from what you knew about or know about Dada and things like this. Would you mind to
be glad to do it. Mm-hmm. And this poem comes out of the book Faustzeichnungen. And Faustzeichnungen is a book of a few hundred pages, and the entire poem derives from only the letters in Faustzeichnungen, so in a sense the poem really falls out of that word Faustzeichnungen. And this one is, I aus ein, ein aus Stein, Stein aus Augenstein, Augenstein aus Asien, Asien aus Fantasien.
Here, just start whenever you feel ready to start.
Okay, well, here is another poem from the new collection called Altnordische Gedichte. And I said about the other, the poems come out only of the letters in the title. For example, this title is Mit Bestimmungsrecht. And this whole poem comes out of the Buchstaben in Mit Bestimmungsrecht. For example, let's read the poem. And it comes all in the order in which these letters occur in the title Mit Bestimmungsrecht, the following poem. Meine Knies sinkt mir bei Tisch. Mensch, 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 muss, muss, muss. Bestimmt. Bert Brecht singt mir in einem Ohre. Mensch, 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 Mut, Mut, Mut. Es stimmt. Bei mir im Bett singt meine sture Muse. Mensch, Mensch, Mensch. Tu es, Emmett, tu es, Emmett. Ich tu es, ich tu mein Buch. Ich singe mit Recht, ich singe mit Brecht, ich singe mit Stimmungsrecht. Bim, 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 bim. Bim 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 bim